Hello and welcome to episode 37 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And this week we are talking to Anjali Menon, the award-winning writer and director of popular Malayalam movies like Manjarikuru, Ustad Hotel and Bangalore Days.
Born in India and raised in the Middle East, Anjali likes to call herself the quintessential Gulf kid. And in this episode she talks about her education in film studies and the entire decade of her life spent working on her very first film. She also talks about her record-breaking blockbuster success of her following films. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show.
Welcome to the show, Anjali. As a fellow Malayali and someone who watched Bangalore Days thrice when it first came out, and once again in preparation for this interview, I feel beyond thrilled to be able to talk to you right now.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you. Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
And over the past few weeks, Anjali, in the duration of our correspondence, even I watched all your films, and now you have a new British Indian non-Malayali superfan.
Thank you, Meenal. That's really sweet.
As always, we want to start at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And we know that you were what you call the quintessential Malayali Gulf kid. And when you were in the fourth grade, you put up a musical for all your schoolmates where you guys practiced and performed on stage and everyone enjoyed the show. But years later, when they all grew up... Yes, from your blog. But years later, when everyone grew up and they all took mainstream jobs, you continued making musicals on the silver screen for the whole world to watch and enjoy. But it wasn't exactly as if a 9-year-old Anjali just made up her mind to start making films when she grew up, because you started off by getting a degree, a bachelor's degree in commerce. So why commerce?
Well, I come from a business family, actually, and I've been groomed to move into that line. And I've witnessed more, you know, business deals than films, actually. So when I was doing my graduation, I was definitely interested in the performing arts and media, but it was just, you know, in preparation for my MBA. So that's the reason I ended up taking the commerce degree. But to be very frank with you, I think even more than my filmmaking degrees, it's that bit of commerce that has helped me.
So when did you decide to make the switch to television production, and what prompted that decision?
Well, over the years, I've been very interested in performing arts and theater and everything, but I never thought of it as a potential job. And when I had to make a decision about going in for a post-graduation, which would equip me to, you know, become employable, I started to think, what if these things that I have, you know, a deep passion for, what if I found my profession within that? And that's when sort of, you know, I started scoping out the options available for media training. And at that point in India, we had very limited options, which were well within the academic structure. My parents were very clear that they didn't want me just wandering off and doing some random course. They wanted it to be an accredited post-graduation degree. And I think we had just two options, and I ended up choosing one, and luckily got through the entrance and everything. And that is where the switch happened.
And for the benefit of our listeners, I want to put a spotlight on your academic achievements. And after your bachelor's in commerce and your master's in communication studies, which is specializing in television production from Pune University. Wow, this is a big mouthful. But you got your master's in the art and technique of filmmaking from the London International Film School. So, you know, you really went out there, you got your education, and you followed, we could say, the sort of textbook path to achieving success in your desired field. And do you think that all these feathers in your cap helped you to establish yourself as one of the most respected and sought-after female filmmakers in Malayalam cinema? And do you think this helped you gain more respect and footing in the field?
I don't, you know, first of all, I don't think I deserve all those superlatives. But besides that, what I think these degrees helped me achieve more than anything was the confidence of my family. You know, it really didn't matter as much as, you know, to them than for anybody else. Because the idea that I was willing to study the area and I was willing to put that many hours and put that many years into this kind of work is what convinced them that this was not some kind of a passing fancy, that this was something I wanted to pursue very seriously, and that I would go to extra lengths to ensure that I could really learn. And that is what brought them around, because they weren't really, you know, very happy with the idea of me joining film or taking up cinema as a profession. It was a big no-no at home. And finally, they did get convinced when they saw that, you know, the kind of work that went into it. But otherwise in the industry, it just starts as an opener. You know, you just have an advantage of like anybody who would have studied a little bit in their field. Beyond that, in practice, truly speaking, you learn on the ground. The degree from London Film School really helped me, not in terms of the degree itself, but the whole experience of living in another country, completely independent of any support, completely independent of any kind of, you know, any kind of direction. That experience, that was a true life experience, and that is what helped me. And besides that, we had an opportunity to work on a whole lot of short films and documentaries in various capacities. The course in itself was something very hands-on, and therefore, you know, to learn the craft, there wasn't a better place. I thank what I learned there when I come to obstacles in my work right now, and then I realize that that kind of all-round experience really, really helps.
And Anjali, obviously, because you went to London and you studied there, obviously, to do something like that, you need financial support as well. And do you think that a person, maybe someone who cannot afford a proper education in the creative fields, do you think they have opportunities to still make it big in the same time frame as you?
I don't think your academic qualification has anything to do with your success. I think at the end of the day, right, it's the person you are, the drive you have. There are people I'm working with, my current collaborators, in my work, even in my latest film. They are young blokes, you know, who have just done their schooling and moved into the field. And they're fantastic. And I learned so much from them because, you know, they have a very different energy. And simply because they haven't had that kind of formal education, they are very creative. They do not stick to any particular rules. They think out of the box. And I'm learning to do a lot of that myself. So I think each route has its own advantages and disadvantages, but nothing actually says, okay, now you're set to achieve success. At the end of the day, it's your drive, whole lot of luck, and of course, you know, the hard work that you put in.
So Anjali, being raised abroad and being exposed to multiple languages as you were a young child, that has had quite an effect on your writing and your creativity. I read on your blog that you wrote your first script for Manjari Kudu in English, and later you kind of challenged yourself to attempt to type out a story using a Malayalam keyboard. And finally, you say that now you write in a sort of Manglish, a mixture of both the languages.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm in a similar position as you because my mother also refused to communicate with me in any language but Malayalam while I was being raised in North India. So I can speak fluent Malayalam, but I never learned to officially read or write in the language. And Meenal doesn't know this, and many of our listeners probably don't know, but Malayalam as a language is one of the most difficult ones out there with very complex rules. And you can maybe learn to read if you grasp the alphabet, but writing, that's a whole other ballgame. So how does Manglish really work out for you when you're catering to a Malayali audience and writing dialogues for your characters, and that too funny dialogues?
See, it's very funny. This gets thrown a lot at me because when I came in initially, I was very open and honest about the fact that I didn't know the language and that I first wrote my script in English. And even today, I think in English, okay? As a person, I think in English and I continue to write my scripts in English. It is only when it is being shared with other people do I move it to another language. And when it comes to writing, the way I think is my vocabulary in Malayalam is very, very limited. The peculiar thing about Malayalam is that the way we speak it at home or among friends is not how you speak it in a formal space. You cannot really address an audience with the kind of Malayalam that you would speak at home. But, you know, I don't really have a choice because I am not comfortable or familiar with that kind of formal language. And therefore, I tend to have all my writing in that simple, you know, home Malayalam, which I think Shashi Tharoor calls a pidgin kind of Malayalam. And you know, I continue to do that. And fortunately, it's worked for me. Because if you take any dialogue from any of my films, they're all really, really simple. You know, stripped down to the basics. Anybody could have said that. You don't need a big high-flown writer to do that. But it's much more about the situations. It's much more about the moments than about the language. My language is extremely simple. I don't think anyone can beat me on that. It doesn't get much simpler than this.
And Anjali, do you have a support system that helps you write better in Malayalam and convey exactly the ideas that you've done in English?
Not anymore. What I do, I want to say this again. A lot of people come to me and they say, oh, can I send you a Malayalam script? But do you even know to read and write Malayalam? And then I have to say, okay, once upon a time I said I didn't. But you know what? Time moves on. People learn. I do learn the language and I do know to read and write. So right now, my process is such, I write in English, but I find myself, if it's for a Malayalam film, then the dialogue, I've started writing that straight into Malayalam. Because how people speak, rather than write in English and change the meter and write it again in Malayalam, I'm preferring to do it just straight off once. Since that is not outsourced, I might as well do it myself.
And, you know, in true nerd fashion, I have a confession to make to you.
Mm-hmm.
I have read every single blog post that you've written in the past 8 years, wow. Starting from your introductory hello post in September 21st, 2009, to the most recent one titled Time for Change, published on Feb 19th of this year. And I devoured your writing. I absolutely love it.
Is it getting better or worse?
But I absolutely loved it from beginning to end. And I try to write myself, Anjali, and I think I wouldn't be wrong in assuming that you didn't just wake up one morning and decide to become a writer. So I'm very interested to know where it all began. Did you maintain a diary growing up?
See, I'm really not a writer. I am not. Because I'm not one of those people who can sit there and just, you know, spill their guts onto a page. I can't. And, I would just have some thoughts that I'd like to share. And that's about it. I mean, as a child, I've read a lot. And as an adult, I'm not reading enough. But the whole idea, I think, is about sharing ideas, right? About that whole blog was just a setup to communicate to the world, because a lot of people started, quoting and misquoting and misinterpreting a lot of the things I was saying. And I realized that I need to have my own space to say these things. And that's how I started that blog off. And though I've been really lazy on that, when I'm really moved, I really, do find myself finding the time to sit and make that note. It's never been about the writing. It's never been about the language. It's never been about the skill. But it's been much more about sharing ideas. It's just a conversation. I love reading what people write back. It's more for that, in fact, that teaches me so much more than any book I would.
And apart from the fourth grade play that you put up with your friends, do you have any distinct memory of writing something for the first time simply because you saw writing as a creative outlet?
No, not actually. Somehow it's I've never seen it as this thing, okay, I'm going to sit in my table and write this creative piece. It's never quite been like that. It's always been like, oh my God, this is such a terrible play, let's write something else, or that's a, that dialogue doesn't work, so let's write something new. Or, this story, how much better could it be if we told it from another way? So it's always been kind of a necessity rather than, sort of an endeavor to write. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes sense. And you live in Mumbai, which is the main hub of Bollywood, although you're a Malayalam filmmaker. And I know that at one point your parents shifted to Mumbai, but is that the reason why you also made the choice to live there?
No. My parents got here for their honeymoon. That was like way time back. But my husband, when I met him, was working out of Mumbai. And that was the reason I moved after marriage. I moved to Mumbai because of that. So it was a purely personal decision, nothing to do with the profession. And I always wanted to make my first film as Malayalam. I didn't intend to make all my films as Malayalam, but because that first film got made there quite naturally, you get more traction in the industry where you've worked before. So therefore, the opportunities kept opening up, and that's the reason I've continued to work in Malayalam, though I live in Mumbai.
So do you feel that it would be more convenient if you lived in Kerala?
Oh no, not at all. For the person I am, I cannot really compromise my personal life for my professional life. I wouldn't, because I treasure my family and the time I have with them and my privacy and everything. And how much ever I love Kerala right now, it's quite compromised my privacy. So I'm really happy to be able to get on a flight and go live somewhere else.
And on the flip side, since, because of your location in Mumbai, do you think you could expand your influence to Bollywood at some point?
See, I don't think my location is the reason that would, happen. I think it would be because I have stories that are interesting to Bollywood, It would be that, no matter where I'm located. So this living in Mumbai is just incidental, actually.
Speaking of Bollywood, what is your general perspective on it, Anjali?
I don't actually like calling it Bollywood, because that makes it look like a poor cousin to Hollywood, which it isn't. I think India has a very specific definition of cinema, where, we have our own culture, we have our own, idiom, we have our own idiom of arts, which is, embodied in Bollywood. And a lot of people run it down as some kind of, farce, not even a farce, some kind of, tomfoolery on screen, but that's so not it. There is a very specific language there. And today, the kind of films that are coming out of the Mumbai film industry are actually challenging even that concept, because we have such a varied, a set of films coming out from all different filmmakers and from all different subjects and treatments. And I think it's a very exciting time in the Mumbai film industry. And I'm so happy as an audience member to be able to go watch cinema that's so different on my local screen.
And I agree. Anjali, I personally feel some Bollywood films really put out a very positive message to people who are watching, especially in India at a time where growth is needed in our generation. And I see in all your movies, you've painted a very honest picture of the life of some Keralites. And is this the vision that you have with your future work, basing your plots on real problems we face in this day and age?
I think, when one creates any kind of work, our worldview would naturally step in, when you do have an opinion on certain things, they're bound to emerge in your work. So it's not entirely conscious, but I don't restrict myself from doing that. In fact, sometimes one would have to be pulling back, because when if you have a very strong opinion on things, you would try to temper it down a little bit so that more people can relate to it. But I think it's very natural that your worldview will emerge in your work.
So we know that you've cast some of the most famous Malayali actors in your films, and most who have starred in previous blockbuster hits. But apart from starring actors and actresses who can make your movie sell, you also made sure that your writing and your content and storytelling wasn't compromised and it was of a high quality. And we see many Bollywood films where you have, Hrithik Roshan, Salman Khan, and the movie sells mainly because their faces are plastered everywhere. The content isn't given so much attention, and that's what sometimes disappoints me quite a lot. So as a film director, how do you find this balance of making your work sell, but also creating content that you feel holds true value?
Well, I make very few films, as you can see. I take a long time to make a film. And if I don't put in the effort, then, there's really no point in taking all that time, is there? See, at the end of the day, I'm just making the kind of film that I'd like to watch. So it's funny where, as a filmmaker, your aims are almost opposed as that of a writer. When any writer writes, I think for them, the one thing that should be is that we shouldn't write to be read. You should just be honest and just be able to bring forth stuff. But what's peculiar about writing for film is that you're only writing to be read, and read not just by the audience, but read by everybody who's going to be part of making the film. So that changes, that in itself, that basic factor spins the writing on its head. Because you're not writing as a writer, but as a filmmaker. And for a filmmaker, at the end of the day, the idea is to communicate, to reach the audience. There is this documentary that I'm just completing right now. It's a biopic on a very famous theater person called Kavalam Narayana Panikkin. Yeah. And I see Kavalam sir as a mentor. And he would explain the rasa theory very beautifully, where at the end of the day, in the Natyashastra, any communication actually reaches its completion only when the same rasa, the same emotion, the same experience is felt by the viewer, by the audience. So if I want the audience to feel what I'm feeling, then, that is the effort I need to put into my craft.
If I understand correctly, Anjali, in the timeline of your work, a short version of Manjari Guru was created and showcased in the IIFK in 2008. And then you created Happy Journey, a short film featured in Kerala Cafe in the year 2009. So what happened in the gap between your return from London and the IIFK screening of Manjari Guru? Did you immediately start writing the script for the story?
I was writing it from London, actually. So I had several drafts of that screenplay. This is the first one, and you're always trying to make it happen. And I came back, I think it was 2003. And 2003, yes, I came back in 2003 and then, continued to do my writing. Immediately got married, actually, within the year, and moved to Mumbai, continued writing again. And once it had reached a certain level, once we had a full-bound screenplay, I put in some funds through my company, Little Films, and started, to do the pre-production. At that stage, the National Film Development Corporation had announced a international co-production scheme where people who had 30% of the funding could, apply for the rest of the funding to them. And we applied through that scheme, and we were the only film selected from, more than 100 applicants, I believe.
Wow.
So that happened. But once the film was made, as in once the film was shot, we ran into trouble with our co-producers because they wanted, they had new ideas on where the film should go. And at that point, when we had a certain, we entered a certain conflict zone, the film was stopped in post-production. It was halted. So I could never complete my film, though it was shot in 2007. the film could be completed only in 2012. So all I had was, you know, a certain version of the film, which was shorter than the final version. And that was on video. You know, we couldn't get a film copy, nothing. And with that, people who had seen the film in edit suggested, why don't you at least try and apply to some festivals? Maybe that would help the producers see the value of the film. So that's what I did. So when we applied to these festivals, they accepted it, they screened it on the video. And, you know, fortunately, it got, you know, good reviews and some awards and everything. Unfortunately, none of this affected the producers. They didn't really see the worth of the film still. So finally, in 2010, I bought back the film after Kerala Cafe and things. I was not doing another feature film because I wanted to get Manjarikuru out there and only then do another feature film. So I waited. I did that short for Kerala Cafe. And then 2010, we actually paid the money back to the producers and bought the film from the NFDC. It was the first time that has happened in the history of NFDC. We paid their money back. We bought the film back. Then we completed post-production and released the film in 2012.
It was essentially a decade of work, basically. You started in London, you came back.
Yes.
And then a decade of your life was dedicated to Manjarikuru.
I would say so.
Oh my God, Anjali, you started, you know, from scratch. And I'm sure that, you know, no one can just wake up one morning and decide to make a film, no matter how amazing your ideas are. So you need to know the right people too. You need to maneuver a very complex system. And how did you initially go about gaining connections in the Malayalam film industry? What were your initial... We know what your initial years were like with this film, but how did you gain connections there?
See, there was no thing of gaining connections. I simply went about making the film. Once, I got the funding in place, I literally took my bound script and went to every actor I wanted in the film and said, you know, this is the film you want to make. Would you please be a part of it? And fortunately, all of them agreed. And then we just went about making the film. There was nothing about really gaining connections. All I did was, you know, to find the right crew. We put in a lot of effort, and fortunately, a wonderful team of people came together from Mumbai, from friends, you know, who were abroad, from friends in Chennai, from people in Kerala. All of them came together and we made that film. So even after the film got made, a lot of people didn't really know about the film because it was not entirely, you know, an industry-driven film. Until it was released, people really didn't know much about Manjarikuru. And what really helped me know a lot of people in the Malayalam film industry was Kerala Cafe. Because for the outsider, that was the first film, that was my first piece of work that got released. So that is what they saw me with. And there were 10 filmmakers who were making that film. And there was a filmmaker who produced the whole thing. And so all of them were really, really sweet, actually. It was very much a family atmosphere. And all of us literally held hands when the film was released. And that really helped me, you know, get to know more people in the industry. That is what really helped. I met many of my future collaborators on that film.
And when people look at you and your success in the field, they see a sort of a steady upward growth. And all your movies have been critically acclaimed and they've been really big hits. And the success is all we see now. We don't know the dips in those growths and struggles you may have had in between. So have you ever reached a breaking point with any of your films? You know, maybe even to the point of almost wanting to quit.
Never to the point of wanting to quit. But yes, there have been several breaking points almost in every film. So, it's not as easy as everybody sees it on the outside. And I'm not someone who rants and raves about those things. So, you know, I rather just go off the scene once my work is out there. Each of these films are not, you know, they haven't been easy experiences at all. It's a different matter that I cherish those experiences because I've learned so much from it. And even the whole experience of Manjarikuru being my first film, you know, when there's something that you have worked so hard for, you've put your spirit, your soul, your everything into it, and when it doesn't see the, you know, light of day for 4 years, then, you know, that can really break you. A lot of people told me, forget about this film, move on, make another film. But I know how much effort I had put into that film, and I was not willing to let that pass. Besides me, there were a whole lot of people who put in so much effort, the actors, the cast, the crew, everyone. And I just felt responsible, and I couldn't let that pass. And I think I felt very redeemed when the film actually got released. And, when the few people who saw it in the theater were applauding, you know, that mattered a lot to me. And I'm actually thankful for a lot of the experiences with Manjarikuru, because that's where I first met a lot of the negatives. And it's actually taught me more than I had thought it would. I thought, you know, I was creating Manjarikuru, but I realized today that actually the film was creating me.
You were relentlessly and stubbornly creative with your film throughout.
it's where, you know, you're constantly shaped. You're constantly shaped into whatever will make your next film. That's how I see it.
You know, Anjali, my mother-in-law, she's a total badass. She runs her own business and she runs it like a boss. But I've heard many stories of how she is made to jump through a lot of hoops in government offices and other public institutions in Kerala, especially in comparison to her husband and her sons. Because as a woman running a business, she somehow constantly has to prove her worth in order to be taken seriously in these institutions. And she has to show them that she's capable and that she's not here to quit. And I imagine, from hearing everything that you've told me so far, I imagine it must not be very different for you as a woman doing what some people might associate with men in the Malayalam cinema, a job that most people associate with men. So have you ever felt like you've also constantly had to prove your worth every time you entered a room with an idea or a need, especially because you were a woman?
See, it's not, I don't really care that much about, you know, proving my worth, but I've always wanted that whatever, you know, one does, one should do it with a certain level of integrity. And I think that's good enough. But what I totally understand and empathize with what you're saying, because I've believed in, you know, working with a certain integrity, and my standards for myself are quite intense, and I'm very demanding of myself. But I rarely make it. I'm not really always happy with my work. I think I should get much better. But what is key is to remember that for others, you know, it's not about me proving my point to them. But the way that others see you is very different. They don't just see you for the individual you are. They see you for what you represent. They see you for this person of a different gender who actually represents all of her gender. So if I make a mistake, you know, that is not going to go down just in my name. It is going to go down for every woman who's going to be making the next film. And this is not just about me. This is about every woman who's out there. Okay. Typically, when a film does well, they'll say, oh, great, it did well. But if a film is not actually reached somewhere where it's supposed to reach, then they are a woman filmmaker. You know, it's difficult for them, blah, 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 blah. I hate it when that happens. This whole thing about the apologetic tone that comes in. Mm. You know, that is quite pathetic. And what I've always wanted is for people to be able to watch my film, to be able to work with me, to be able to collaborate without thinking of my gender. I think that is important because it's the work that matters, not my gender.
And Anjali, for 5 whole years of my life, on almost every weekend, I spent altogether 8 hours on a train shuttling between Cochin and Trivandrum, because I went to college in Cochin and my parents' house was in Trivandrum. And in that phase of my life, I have come across a lot of peculiar characters in the form of co-passengers. And strangely enough, most of these weirdest characters turned out to be men. Surprise, surprise. There have been some that sat on their seats, like they paid for my seat as well and were entitled to all the extra space. And some others that discreetly tried to take my picture without even turning off the bloody flash. And there were some others who tried to get my phone number or just strike up a conversation when I tried to bury my nose in the book. Which is why when I watched Happy Journey, your short film in the anthology Kerala Cafe, back in the year 2009, which was also the year when I started college, I could immediately relate to the character of the female protagonist. Did you write that out of any kind of personal experience while traveling? Because the journey was being made to Calicut, which is your hometown.
Right. No, it wasn't like one specific experience. It's just this, you know, the multitude that all of us face.
Yeah, it was so relatable. I think that's something that stands out in all of your work. It's very relatable. And Jagati Srikumar also portrayed the character of the annoying male passengers so realistically that I totally get why you decided that you wouldn't make the short film if he refused to play that role.
I couldn't imagine anyone else doing it.
It makes me curious, have you ever had actors mapped out for the characters that you wrote all the time, or did you ever write specific characters knowing who would play these characters best?
Not quite. I think when the character is born, there's actually no face to it. And then, you know, after it's developed to a certain extent, then I would like to think of a face. And it's usually at that stage that I'd bounce it off an actor or start looking for an actor. And depending on the response, then once a certain actor is finalized, then the idea is to also take the character as close to the actor as possible. So that process is part of the writing.
And that's what you did with Karimka in Ustad Hotel as well, once you found out who's going to be acting.
Yes. That happened with Karimka as well as Faizi, actually. Because with Karinka, with you know, the character was a lot more boisterous, the Upupa character. But when we knew that Tilakan sir was going to be acting in it, we realized that, okay, this could be taken to a very different level. But he also had certain limitations physically of what he would be able to do. So we rewrote things where, you know, there was sort of a certain physical, you know, an active physical involvement involved. We moved that out and we introduced other scenes. So it was much more of a slightly deeper philosophical kind of, you know, portrait that we drew for him. For Fezzi, though, it was quite interesting because I had written the character of this young guy, and once I got to know that, you know, Dholker would be playing it, at that point there was very little information out about him. And I kept sort of scrounging around the internet to try and find a few things. And the little that I got, we tried to bring it into the film, where how he would be as a character, how he was, you know, close to his sisters and close to his mother in a way, and that kind of sensitivity that he seemed to have. And I think it worked well for him too.
Anjali, Happy Journey is a short 15-minute film that portrays so many aspects of our society and intricate characters in such a short span of time. And I know this because Ankita was so kind to translate everything for me and explain what was happening.
Oh yes, thank you.
But the movies you wrote and directed after that hit almost a 3-hour mark, and they also echoed many of the flaws in our society. So clearly you're very capable of delivering your ideas in any time frame, just like in Happy Journey and even in your blog posts. But as a director and writer, why do you choose to make your mainstream movies slightly longer than what most of us would call the norm?
Oh, there's no choice there. It just happens, actually. Often I'm trying to make it shorter, but, you know, I'm a greedy person. I like more characters. I like more love. I like more everything. So, you know, when you add so much more of it, it's very difficult to cut down. I've actually, a very senior filmmaker once told me that you need a very good editor, not just for your film, but for your thoughts and everything, because you can't really, you know, put everything out there. You need to, you know, I think that's one area I need to improve. I need to improve my focus. And, you know, I cannot spread myself out among so many different things in the very same film. So that's important. That's been a learning curve for me. That's what I'm trying in my next film, actually.
I came across a news article which mentioned that the young girl who played Roja in Manjari Guru hit a sort of dead end after the film was released. This is what we read, and we read that she had to go back and work as a receptionist in a photo studio and take care of her mother since her father had passed away. And it was sad to hear that she couldn't even attend award functions where she won awards because, well, she couldn't leave her job, which paid her a very meager salary. And as someone who's working towards female empowerment in cinema, how do you think you can be part of solving this sort of scenario post-production? Keeping in mind that we've heard numerous other stories like this, for example, you know, the child who played the role of a slum child in Slumdog Millionaire.
See, there is, earlier I was extremely optimistic and idealistic about it, thinking that we could really change lives. But there are so many factors in there. I think what we can offer is a support system. I think we need to be able to offer a support system for anyone who wants it. And this is irrespective of gender. This is not about, you know, whether she's a girl or he's a boy. This can happen to anybody. The idea is that we find ourselves socially responsible for those kind of things. And as people who have gained advantages out of, you know, the performances of these children, out of, you know, what they have put into our work, I think it is only due that we give it back, and not just as, you know, money or wages that they are paid as actors, but beyond that, to continue that kind of a relationship and to try and play a role where, you know, they have more opportunities. I think it's important that we do that. And I think a lot of people already do it. But in cases where, you know, people do go off the mainstream and do end up finding themselves in difficult situations, it's among the things that we want to do with the WCC, the Women in Cinema Collective. That is one of the things that we have on our agenda.
So, speaking of Manjari Guru, Anjali, I live in Europe, so to hear stories of children trying to gain their family's wealth is something that I've only really seen on Star Plus, and I've heard some, you know, very vague stories in my family. But when I watched Manjari Guru, the first thing that struck me was that as soon as Vicky's mom got out of the taxi that took her home, she burst into tears. And I was just thinking, like, why did she start crying all of a sudden? You know, it made no sense to me, initially at least. And then it was only after I spoke to Ankita, who has personally seen the sort of, you can say, drama, that I understood what was going on.
Yeah, the minute I saw the actress Urvashi crying after getting out of the cab, I knew that someone in the family was dead. It had to be that.
And I also felt that every character in that home who wanted to take their share of their father's wealth, it felt real. It felt so real. Every detail in their gestures, every line they spoke. I just felt that someone can only write this if they've seen this with their own eyes. So were you at any point a Vicky who came to Kerala from the Gulf and witnessed this kind of family drama?
Most definitely. I was a Vicky, I was a Kannan, I was a Manikruti, I was one of them.
Oh, wow.
See, the thing is, these films are born out of our psyche. Yeah? These films are very much from our environment, from our families. Whatever is not autobiographical is biographical, because it's what you see. You know, it's all around. So I think that's also the reason why people connect to it so much, because, you know, it's irrespective of their cultural background. Even we've shown that film in France, we've shown that film in Germany. Even there, people have come back and said, "Oh my God, you know, we connect with this character." So I think it's beyond that. It's something very human. You know, greed is something that a lot of people have seen in their life. And, the difference between the cost of something and the value of something, that is also something that is very human.
And along those same lines, every family, like you said, has its characters. And you somehow possess the unique superpower of portraying how wretched we human beings can sometimes be. But at the same time, you make them endearing in a very comic fashion. So your portrayal so far, what I've seen is that it shows your maturity in perceiving these characters from a distance. But before you became mature, Anjali, as a child who returned to Kerala from the Gulf every year, how did you perceive them? Were you more of a mute spectator like Vicky, or did you openly call them out on their bullshit?
No, I was always the shy kid who never spoke. Always. You know, I've only been the mute spectator for the longest time.
Manjarikudu has obviously gained a lot of critical acclaim, won a lot of awards immediately after its release in the film festival, and now it's highly recognized. But when the movie had its theatrical release in 2012, I remember people in my circles debating on whether or not they wanted to go to the theater to watch a movie by a new director, a new writer, starring a bunch of kids, because a lot of people didn't know initially that Prithviraj makes an appearance in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And once Ustad Hotel and Bangalore Days came out starring more popular actors targeting a younger demographic, people started going back and watching Manjarikudu and appreciating you for your work. But as a creator of the movie, and especially since this was your first movie and you spent a decade on it, did the initial slow beginning with the theatrical release put you down a little bit, or was it like a life lesson learning process?
See, it was already a victory that we actually managed to just finish that film and get it out. You know, like I said, so many years had gone into it, and I was actually stopping myself from working on any other film until that came out. So it was, you know, like sending yourself into exile. And so I was actually just relieved. More than anything, I was just relieved that we finished the process. Secondly, a lot of feedback came back. A lot of reviews came back. And I was very touched when people were really, you know, relating to it in such a personal way. That for me as a filmmaker, as a writer, that meant a lot. Because it was even before Ustad Hotel, you see. And that really gave me confidence that, yes, this is what I should be doing. This is the kind of film I should make. This is what, you know, this is totally fine. This, along the way through the years when it was sitting in the cans, I had to hear a lot of nonsense about the film. That it was not worthy of completion, that it was not worthy of putting funds into. A whole lot of things had been said about it. So to receive such positive reviews meant a whole lot to me. And then when we talk about the finances, of course it was disappointing. And that played a big role in me deciding to do a completely commercial venture as my next film.
Right. So it was definitely a learning process for you.
Definitely, definitely. Because I was questioning myself, saying, because I don't know if you're aware, Manjarikudu released on May 18th. And within, after a month, about, I think it was June 29th or something, Ustad Hotel released. Okay. And Ustad Hotel was a hit from the first day, first show. It broke all records till then. And for me, this was a huge learning curve. You know, within a month, both of these films came out, and they are two completely different films, two very different trajectories. One was done entirely in, I think, about 8 months from script to screen. The other one was, you know, 10 years in the making. And this kind of, the difference in the result was, that disparity was there in the result as well. So I was really keen to understand, okay, so that is what, you know, makes it commercial. So then, you know, how do I do that as a director? I want to know if I can do that as a director. And that's when, you know, the next subject that I had wanted to work on, I thought I would really like to try something that, you know, can work as a commercial film.
So we love your movies, Anjali. We love the characters that you've written. And there's one aspect of Ustad Hotel that didn't make a lot of sense to me. And I hope you can give me some closure here.
Mm-hmm.
When Abdul Razak, the father, takes all his children to Dubai after the demise of his wife, we see how these tiny little girls just start spending a lot of time in the kitchen with their little brother, and they cook all kinds of traditional goodies. And the father never remarried till his daughters were married off. And it looks like he was pretty indifferent towards the girls overall. So how did they ever learn to cook and take care of a home? They never had any influential figure in their life, you know, guiding them through the whole process. It's just a mystery to me.
My dear, is that the only one you found? Look closer and there are dozens of them all around.
They're just so cute, those little girls. In the initial scene where he goes off to Dubai with the mother while she's pregnant with Faizi. Mm-hmm. And I just think, oh, they're like little dolls. And these dolls come to Dubai and they just start cooking. And I'm like, how did that happen?
No, seriously. See, when we write a script, there is often, you know, there is a certain picture you have in your head, which the director then takes. You know, even if I'm the director then takes that script and interprets it in their own way. Okay, their own logic, their own world, that is what is created. So when a director is working with a script, they decide what goes into the frame, what is the logic and all of that. And if you ask me as a writer, oh God, I think there are so many things wrong with my script that I could sit down and, you know, we could have an entire interview about just that. So, you know, this is just one of them. And there are many, many areas, yeah, where the logic is off, where this should have been explained, where that could have gotten better, where the slant on this is not right. And this is what I see when I see the films. You know, so that one thing is irritating you. You can imagine that I must be going crazy with all these things that I can see.
I hope I didn't bring back anything.
No, not at all, not at all. But this is how it is. See, every filmmaker, okay, when I read the script of Bangalore Days on my set while I'm directing it, I'm like, you know, who the hell wrote this? You know, what is this? You know, tear it up, you know, put it on fire. Let's do something else. That happens. It's not about who wrote it or who directed it. That's the process. So in the writing of the script, you destroy pretty much the initial concept you had because you give birth to something new. In the making of the film, you end up destroying the script that was written because you're again making it something new. In the edit, once again, you're destroying the process to create something new. So, you know, this is a constant, a chain of reinterpretation that happens right up till your title scroll in the film. You know, that's how it is. I just see it like that. And yes, a lot of areas I need to get better. I need to make it, you know, it's not, I don't think, you know, any work is perfect. But yes, such things, you know, such logic should definitely be explained. I agree on that.
So Anjali, the whole angle of a family trying for a male child every year and the continuous disappointment they face after only giving birth to girls is a reality that still lies across India. In the case of Ustad Hotel, a woman lost her life, you know, due to health-related issues, which came about from trying so hard to give birth to a male child. And then in the end, I noticed how Abdul Razak had very little consideration, respect, or gratitude towards his wife, who literally died trying to please him.
He has a dialogue even saying that your mother's only given me trouble.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And if Ezi had been another girl child, that poor woman's death would have been for nothing. But when you write these characters and storylines, do you consciously set a comic precedence to them so as not to offend anyone? Or does making the scene quite funny drive the point home more effectively?
I think, see, with humor, the beauty about humor is that everyone welcomes it, okay? There are no filters. Everyone welcomes humor. But once they have laughed, if you're able to make them think a moment, you know, then they've already welcomed your thought into their minds. I think it gives us a easier entry. It gives us a much, much more accessible approach. So the most difficult things, I feel, it's always better to use a little humor to get it across.
And the whole movie revolves around a single idea of fate. You know, it's all about kismet or fate, as Karimka puts it. And he seems to be right as far as the plot goes, but you wrote that plot and you had the power to make it whatever you wanted it to be. So I want to ask you if in real life you're on team kismet or do you think you're on team we make our own destiny?
See, I have a bit of the both because in the bigger perspective, I think kismet does, you know, play a big role. But how you get there, I think that's how you decide. There may be this final goal, but you know what your journey is going to be. For me, my life is about my journey. It's not about any destination. So how my journey is going to be is something that I decide, right? So that you know, that quality of life I want, that quality of you know, experience I want, that is something that I determine. But at the end of the day, kismet does definitely play a role. Enna thadka na aarku pattula.
And in all your movies, you've written characters that are born and raised in the Gulf. In all of them, be it Vicky in Manjari Kuru, Faizi in Ustad Hotel, Divya in Bangalore Days, there was quite a significant coming of age aspect involved, especially with Faizi and Divya. So these Gulf kids slowly progress from being quite naive to becoming really mature and worldly wise. So where do you get the inspiration for your Gulf kids especially?
Well, I'm completely a Gulf kid myself, yeah. And I've always felt that we are either underrepresented or badly represented. I mean, all I remember seeing from movies in the 80s and 90s would be this one spoilt Gulf kid who has no other dimension whatsoever on screen. And I would resent that because, you know, they don't know our struggles. They don't know what it feels like to be a migrant, to neither belong here, not belong there. And, you know, there's a whole lot of issues that we deal with. Today, I'm a reverse migrant, and I can therefore reflect on it and you know, say my piece. And any opportunity given, I will. Because I think we need to be far more represented as a population. Kerala's whole economy has floated on the Gulf money at many points in history. And the least thing we can do is at least represent that population.
And Bangalore Days was a film that really struck a chord in my heart. Maybe not personally, but to the many stories I've heard. You know, for example, Divya doesn't pursue her dream of doing an MBA because an astrologer said that she has to get married imminently. Or when Arjun seems to shy away from speaking about his divorced parents. You know, this is, again, it's all real. And for the first time, I watched a movie and thought, wow, you know, I totally get it. And each character in Bangalore Days has so many layers, which are, they're slowly exposed throughout the film. You know, when Arjun wasn't the kind of guy to go and find love, but at the end of the movie, he does, and he grows as a person and changes through what he experiences. And the biggest laugh I had, Anjali, was when Kuttan, who is looking for a bride who specifically wears a sari, and the bride who strictly follows his culture, ends up with a white girl. That was really funny. So where does this sort of inspiration come from? You know, so many characters, so many layers, and it takes a lot of creativity and ideas to develop characters like this.
See, I think when you meet people, we don't just see them, you know, for face value, right? You like to delve into them. You like to understand different things that make them up. At least I do. And I think I approach a character just like that. So nobody is you know, a cardboard person. Everybody comes with their own stories, their own baggage, their own good, bad, ugly, everything. So when you respect a character, I think, you know, all of that comes in. And more than anything, the very people who are, you know, embodying this character, those people make a big difference, because when they see that you care, then they care about that character. So when, you know, a certain person is playing a role, then he or she is understanding that this is a very responsible position. So everything that I'm portraying needs to reflect this and so much more. And so they play it in a certain way. So every character is a collaboration between the writer, director, and the actor. So I think the credit needs to be spread out. You know, it's not just one person who deserves it.
And we know that Monsoon Wedding is a film that has inspired you a lot. And even the scene from Bangalore Days, where there's a shot of the cousin sleeping on a bed from up top, was unconsciously inspired by a poster of the movie Monsoon Wedding. So apart from that, can you talk about maybe your biggest influences to write the kind of characters you do? Like, you did mention that, you know, it's a sort of collective effort, but are there any specific books that you read or any movies that spark ideas like this?
See, I'm constantly reading in terms of the craft. I think, you know, it's funny where I'm on a flight and I'm reading about screenwriting, and they say, do you still have to read? And I'm like, of course I have to read. I have to read even more now. So it's a constant process where, you know, a lot of people seem to think that, okay, you learn in film school or whatever, and then you move on and do your own thing. But no, I think at every stage we need to keep learning. But in terms of working with actors, I really like the work, you know, the output from Judith Weston. She has a really nice way of working with actors. And she has a beautiful book called Filmmaker's Intuition. And that's a very significant book for me. Besides that, I've learned a lot from, like I said, Kavalam Narayana Panikkar sir. He's somebody who works in theater, but his processes as a writer and a director have really moved me. And I think I can't say my processes are similar, but I think there's definitely some kind of learning that has happened there. And I hope someday I would be able to, you know, emulate more of what he did.
So, Anjali, you're a feminist in life, and more importantly, a feminist in your very patriarchal workplace, from what I've been reading in recent times.
So I have to say first that I'd rather identify with being a humanist more than a feminist. And in Kerala, we recognize a third gender too.
Which part or aspect of Malayalam cinema do you think needs feminism or humanism more than anything else? And where is the sort of patriarchy most evident, do you feel?
In the content.
Oh, in the content of the movies, you mean?
Yes. See, it's everywhere. It's everywhere, and it is not just about the Malayalam film industry. It is everywhere in our world. It is everywhere in our society. It's everywhere, and Malayalam film industry is just a part of the society in Kerala, or the part of the society in India. So as a result, all of that seeps right into the film industry. But where it, the reason I'm specifying content is that is the area where it has the most impact. Because if things were a certain way within the industry, but it didn't filter into the content, then you would not be recreating the same monsters again. Okay, now because it is reiterated in the content, a certain mindset is reiterated in the content, the impact of that is much beyond just the industry. We as an industry are capable of affecting mindsets of the entire society. So therefore, I think the biggest area where of concern is the content.
Now, we know that you're doing your part on a very large scale with the WCC, the Women in Cinema Collective, but we'll get into that in the next episode as we discussed. But I want to ask you something I noticed when the credits started rolling in Bangalore Days. This movie came out in 2014, which was 3 years before you went out there and took a stand with the WCC. And in the credits, the first name to appear was that of Nazria Nazim, the main female protagonist. Was this a conscious decision? Because we know that it was not in the alphabetical order or based on the order of appearance or even seniority. So was this a stand you took with your own film, or is there an entirely different technical reason that people like me just don't understand?
I thought it would be good to do it that way. That is the only reason. That is the only reason.
And Anjali, I'm a total skeptic when it comes to movie adaptations in other languages. I wasn't a big fan of the various Manichitratara adaptations because I love the original and I didn't even watch Drishyam in Hindi. And I feel the same way about all the original movies that I love, including your movies. I feel that the most an adaptation in another language can do is justice to the original. I feel what new perspectives can be brought into the adaptation due to multiple difficult factors like rights and commercialization. But as a creator, I'm guessing it must be different for you. How do you feel when your films, your own blood and sweat and tears get adapted into other languages?
See, it's not actually just, I have never seen something as my film. It is, first of all, there is a certain approach when it's everybody's film. And at that point, one cannot really get possessive about something that you don't entirely own. Okay, it is as much my film as my cinematographer's film, as my actor's film, is all of our film. And so I'm not possessive about that at all. So then why would I have a problem if somebody wants to pay me money and take my film and reinterpret it further? I don't have a problem with that. Because that is not my work. That is the work that they are doing. And I see an adaptation as an opportunity to reinterpret this material in a different context, which should reflect that filmmaker's worldview. I do not like movies which are, you know, replicated frame to frame, you know, from one language to the other. I just fail to see the purpose. I think one should just, you know, maybe if that's the idea, then one should just dub it or subtitle it and get it out of the way. But adaptations provide a fantastic opportunity to reinterpret this material. You know, and I, as a filmmaker, really want to adapt somebody else's work. It's something that I really want to do because I feel that, you know, that can be so enriching where you're given a set of characters, you're given a context, and now, okay, take it, make it your own. How wonderful is that?
And I think I already know the answer to this question, but I have to ask you anyway. At the end of the day, which of these three options would you prefer? One, your original film being distributed worldwide with subtitles. Two, new adaptations of your film being made in multiple languages. Or three, dubbing over the original in regional languages.
Subtitles, definitely. Original film with subtitles.
I know you're a fan of subtitles.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's more than anything. See, it's an audiovisual medium. And if a film is not visual, it's nothing. And I keep saying that, you know, if we really need subtitles to explain a scene, then, you know, we've lost already. So I would rather it be the original film with subtitles, surely.
And a blog post you wrote on November 20, 2009 expresses your disappointment in the fact that Kerala Cafe was released in multiple cities across the country without subtitles. Honestly, Meenal and I searched for it online and tried to purchase it, but we couldn't. And, you know, I feel very bad admitting to this, but we ultimately had to resort to watching it on YouTube because Happy Journey was just 15 minutes long.
True.
But again, you know, since there were no subtitles, I translated everything for Meenal. It would have been so much easier if these beautiful movies were available with subtitles.
Very true. We're trying to change that. With Bangalore Days, when we released it with subtitles, it actually opened up a whole new market for us. You know, we made enough money on that. You compare that to the money that it takes to actually spend on subtitles and the effort, it's nothing compared to what kind of a market you can open up. As a filmmaker, you're not thinking market, you're thinking of the audience. You just want more people to watch your film. You know, and when you come from a sort of hybrid sensibility, I'm really greedy about wanting people who are non-Malayalis also to watch my film. Because, you know, I want to know what they think. I want to know if it connects beyond certain cultural contexts. So I'm really greedy about that. And that's the reason I would think that, you know, we should really spread our audience wide.
And Anjali, you strike me as someone who identifies first as a writer and then as a filmmaker. So do you think there would be any point where you would make a film that you didn't write?
Oh, actually, it's the other way around. I'm writing because, I don't know, I haven't found somebody to write for me yet. I would rather just make films. I would really rather just make films.
Oh, okay. And for our final question for this episode with regards to how this interview went, Anjali, happy Anu?
Valare happy Anu, thank you.
You know how many tries it took me to pronounce that?
Well done, Meenal. I'm proud of you.
Good going, Meenal. We shall, you know, make you an honorary Malayali in next few films.
So thank you so much for coming on the show today, Anjali. It's not often that you get to talk to someone whose movies you love so much.
Thank you so much. This has been really nice.
And thank you, dear listeners, for joining in on our conversation with Anjali. If someone had told a 22-year-old Ankita back in 2014 that she would get to talk to the creator of the film that she just finished watching thrice at PVR, that Ankita would never believe it. Anjali has been a personal hero of mine, and I'm sure that after listening to this episode, even those of you who may not be very familiar with her work would want to check her out.
And while you're checking her out on social media at Anjali Menon Film, do stalk us at Desi Outsiders as well. You can drop in a mail with your thoughts, feedback, or questions to mail@desioutsiders.com. And as always, please rate and review the Desi Outsiders podcast on iTunes and tell all your friends about us.
So until next week, when we meet you with yet another fun conversation, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.
With the shees.